G'day guys, Alex from the tripod again. Not sure what happened on the last one, got disconnected for some reason, so we'll give it another crack. I'll obviously wait for Jacob to comment and try and get him in on the action as well. Hopefully my internet doesn't cut out midway through like last time around. But yeah, so basically what we do here, as you guys know, is we break down every game of the NRL weekend from a betting perspective. So all spread bets at $1.90, and yeah, last week we went 10-8. So 10 wins, 8 losses on the weekend, which is actually a pretty bad weekend for us. You know, you won a little bit of money. I'll just get Jacob in here. But that's actually a pretty bad weekend for us. I mean, we've only had 2, I think, losing weekends out of, you know, 28 rounds of, or 27 rounds of football, essentially. So we've been doing really well. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Thanks, mate. How you going?
Yeah, good, thanks, buddy. I was just saying we went 10-8 last weekend, but it's actually a pretty shit weekend for us. I was looking at the stats, obviously, from the year, and I mean, we're 290-141, which is 67% on the NRL this year. And people love to break it down in terms of units and that sort of thing. So we're up 120 units, which, I mean, if you're putting $100 on every one of our bets, which a lot of people do, you know, you're up 12 grand. And I mean, we started this, you know, a couple years back. And since then, we're up 247 units, which is, you know, nearly 25 grand for the $100 better. So, you know, a 10-8 week isn't great for us. But, yeah, not many games on the board this week on improve.
You know, having said that, speaking about making profit and units, of course, that's our true best bet record, which is what we judge our main plays on. But we do give out bonus value picks. We give out multis. We're actually up way in excess of that number of units. I mean, we've won 100-1 multi this year. Even on the weekend gone, we had the head-to-head multi. The only loser was the Broncos, and that was an insurance multi on Crown, so money back there or bonus back. Our four-leg multi on Willie Hill, we cashed that, so we had a winning play on all four games. And we won our Saturday night multi as well, where we even included
$9,
had the winning upset there as well, three-leg, paying 10-1 or over $9 there. So, 10-8. In our, you know, over 18 50-50s, but to cash a couple of big multis there was pretty sweet. We were on the right side of all four of the games. And look, mate, over under 7.5, I'm going to put the line at for the name barn burner to be mentioned, because there were so many barn burners of matches. We only have 2 matches to review. And we, you know, we do pride ourselves on being betting experts. We're going to break these 2 matches down from a betting angle, no doubt. But, I mean, there's so many talking points. For me, we knew it. We said going into it, like, that weekend, that first weekend in September's finals footy is always one of the best weekends of footy of the year.
Bloody
just
ass.
With the, like, the quantity of, like, high-stakes football matches, not just in rugby league, but, I mean, you got AFL knockout finals. You got even, like, rugby test matches. You got American football started up. You know, the round ball codes, it's just all US Open. It was absolutely all happening on the weekend, and it lived up to every expectation. Like, the, you know, there's some negative stuff coming out of the weekend about a lot of the calls from the referees, about the crowds were down, but we need to just actually sit back and appreciate it. It was just fucking amazing footy, high stakes footy, every single game. At one stage, you probably thought both sides were going to win. Like, at different times in the game,
absolutely.
You really... Each team was in a position to
right.
win.
It is tough with the NRL, though, and, I mean, it's probably similar to other sports, but now, I mean, you're watching the shit in HD at home. Like, it's crystal clear vision. You've got every angle. You know, you've got slow-mo vision. And, you know, some people understandably think that it's better to watch the game at home. You save a few bucks. So, I mean, that is one of the reasons why the crowds are probably down. It's just that the TV coverage has gotten so much better.
Yeah, that's a positive side of it. Although having crystal clear images and like all the best angles doesn't always help the bunker get it right. But we can talk about that when we talk about each game. But yeah, it's a superb product to watch on TV, the comfort of your own home. And also when there's multiple games on and multiple codes, as I just mentioned, there's all the more reason to stay home and actually just watch the footy at home. They said crowds are down 15% from last year's finals. You can put that down purely to the fact that I think Brisbane was at home in week one of last year's finals then when they weren't this week, you know. So there's like 45,000, 50,000. I was there. I think you might have been too when they played the Titans a year ago. So, I mean, don't read too much into that. The AFL is doing brilliantly, and maybe they've got more fanatical people in one area. It is a great sport to watch live. And so if you want to try and compare the NRL to the AFL, it doesn't stack up too well. They had 95,000 people at one game and the NRL didn't get that. But, you know, I will make a criticism actually of the NRL. Fucks me, like completely blows my mind why a side like Manly doesn't get to play their home final at Lotto Land. You know, why doesn't Sharkies get to play at Shark Park? If you're trying to tell me it's so you can put it in a bigger stadium, the fans aren't fucking turning up anyway. So I've yet to be explained to me how that makes sense. And I feel it really does disadvantage sides to an extent.
And maybe if you had, some stats to back it up, like if you had fucking 50,000 people turning up to a prelim final last year, or not a prelim, you know, a round one final last year. But you're not getting those sort of numbers. And I know that they can only hold 20 or 30 of those smaller stadiums, like Pepper Stadium, Lotto Land, you know, those sorts of ones. But I mean, the atmosphere is so much better, you know, having your home fans packed to the rafters, it'd look much better to the game rather than watching these games with fucking a quarter full stadiums. It's not a good look, that's for sure.
No, and the truth is these sides that have to play these neutral venue Sydney finals are not getting a home field advantage. And you look at like when Brisbane plays at home and they're going to play on Friday night, that's the first match we're going to break down. They will get an advantage from playing at Suncorp, like no doubt about it. Melbourne gets and having a smaller capacity is not an excuse for me. And then the other one, the refereeing decisions. Let me just ask you, you might be cutting out a bit. I can still see myself, so not sure.
Yeah, no, I'm back. If you can see me. I cut out for about 10 right. seconds, I'm back.
So, refereeing decisions. I want to talk about all four games last weekend from a betting perspective, but also just quick thoughts, like quick takes on those games. But what was the worst decision, or the one decision that stands out for you from the weekend just past?
Very tough. I mean, the decision to award Panthers that try when I think it was 12-all, where I thought it was blatantly the finger moved backwards, but there was an even worse. There was a worse decision, and that was the Storm's first try in the corner, where it was a blatant forward pass. I can understand they said, you know, the touchy said it definitely touched, you know, the Eels defender's hand, which ends up, I don't think it ended up doing that. But I know, and people said, you know, you can't rule on a forward pass. And that's a whole nother story. But, you know, to be that confident in a call like that when the ball is clearly sailed, you know, 5 metres forward, that is diabolical. And we'll get into that as well, you know. And there's something to be said for the conspiracy theorists that say, obviously, they want the Storm in the prelims, they want the Bronx, they want the big teams like the Roosters with the strong supporter bases. And, you know, the weekend that just went, there's a lot to be said for that. You know, I feel like they have a lot of explaining to do. There was diabolical calls in all four games.
I feel like it's a little bit overblown. Like, I think I disagree with you, and I watched that game with you, and I can live with the decision for that Penrith try. And, I mean, we had Penrith as a side. We had a bunch of best bets all needing the
Panthers. We weren't upset about it.
A couple of them had already gotten up by that point, so maybe we're not unbiased, but I feel like, look, live, if he thought that it had come off his chest or his knee, he gave the try because he never saw it touch the hand. And then of the replays, I didn't think it was definitive. I mean, you've probably seen a lot more videos with fingers bending back than anyone else. So if you think that the fingers bent back, but I've seen other angles where there seems to be some preparation. For me, look, I do think the Sharkies have a case with the penalty that was awarded to tie the game. That definitely wasn't a penalty, and it is pretty poor. You have two refs that didn't give that one, but I didn't think Flano had a lot else to complain about, and I thought that they have themselves to blame. The forward pass, I think the touchy called it forward, and it was Archer who said, "I've got it touched." Now, it wasn't even clear if that ball was touched, and even if it was, I think that was a forward pass, so that was a rough one.
Totally.
And then the other one that stands out for me is the Dylan Walker scoring off that grubber. You know, for that to be called a try and to be overturned when I think the replay shows like it's a dead set line ball. So I feel like it's not a blatantly wrong decision. Maybe in, you know, to the left, maybe he was offside by, you know, a few inches, but that's a really tough one for Manly to stomach, especially when they had a couple, you know, or every video ref decision I think went against them. So I understand that hurts. But these teams had their chance to win these matches, and it isn't fair to just blame the refs. I actually applaud what Greenberg came out and did and said, stop having a whinge. We can talk about literally each match and whether the team won deserve a win. No,
yeah,
exactly.
Plano's
so, all right, Friday night
about,
last
was,
week.
Yeah, it was the first, wasn't it the first Sharks try where Winterstein grounded the ball in the end goal and they scored off that? And that was, that wasn't even touch and go. I felt like that was fairly clear.
All right, let's. So what I thought, we'll do our quick takeaways, but I'll start if it wants to give you time because we haven't really pre-planned this, but we'll go through the four games last week, all absolute barn burners. For me, that, you know, the Roosters probably were the deserved winners on Friday night. It was an absolute cracking game, but the game was there to be won for Brisbane once they scored three in a row and did take the lead. Obviously, the Blake Ferguson, bat back infield was bizarre and a stroke of fortune for the Broncos. What stood out to me was Milford's defence. I thought there were some glaring holes. I was really surprised and disappointed with the softness of a couple of those Roosters tries, and including the winning try. I mean, got to give some credit to Luttrell. That is fucking crazy. With 5 minutes to go, the game on the line, he threw James Roberts out of his way like he's a little kid, like it's a dad playing in the yard with his little kid. Like, that shouldn't really be able to happen. And that was brilliance by Luttrell, but that was soft by Roberts, and it cost Brisbane the game. And, you know, such a high-stakes game to win, you get a week off, a home prelim, and you avoid the Storm. So now Brisbane's got to go the long way around the mountain. But that's what stood out for me. What stood out for you in Broncos Roosters?
A very, very tight game. I agree with you that Roosters were the better side. I think it was clearly two worthy prelim final sides, you know. And even though the game did end up going over, I thought, I didn't really think the Broncos' defense was that great, and that has been one of their strong suits for the season. I just think that... oh, my God. I'm getting a little bit crook, mate. I did think the Roosters' halves were better. I think that, you know, if Boyd doesn't play this weekend, which, you know, hasn't come out for sure yet, but, you know, if they've got another week to get Benji in there, he's going to be better. He wasn't great in finals round one. But another week to gel, a game under his belt, I think he will be better if Boyd doesn't go next week.
And then you had the Eels, you know, Eels Storm of the four games. You would have probably thought this is the least likely to be a close one. It was as close as any. Eels, you know, capitalised on Munster being out. We spoke about the fact they were hard done by. They conceded one try in the first half and it was a dead set forward pass. They conceded basically back-to-back tries to start the second half, which ended up basically winning Melbourne the match. Both times, like, kind of crazy, keep-it-alive, fifth-tackle tries where, you know, just as easily those balls can end up anywhere, and they, you know, ended up in Melbourne tries. Melbourne gets a pen as well and extends the lead to 8. And I think the Eels were really hard done by with that penalty count second half to lose the penalty count 6-1, and they conceded 5 straight. They only got a late pen at all in that second half is ridiculous when you consider how Melbourne Storm will lie all over you pretty much every tackle. I felt that they were probably almost the most hard done by side of all the four losing sides in the comp, to be honest, or in week one of the finals, because I think that it just made life so difficult for them to get back into that one. And there's photos on Facebook and stuff showing the Storm clearly offside when they were down 2 and threatening the Storm's line. And I think, the referees don't want to be seen to be making a decision that decides the match, but they are deciding the match when they're not awarding penalties against the Storm. And I think Brad Arthur had a right to be pretty dirty about that. And the Eels, just so brave in that one.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a question mark how they're going to be able to back up after the disappointment of that one, but they were awesome, and they showed that the Storm are not unbeatable if you can match them in the forwards.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. I thought that the Eels were very, very hard done by, and I did, it's hard to say this, but I think that, you know, watching the game, you just always thought that, you know, every single 50-50 call was going the Storm's way. And I think the pen count was 4-3 to the Storm at half time, and then they went 7-1 or 8-1 in the pen count in the second half, which is pretty diabolical. So I feel bad for the Eels, and I'll talk about when we get to Eels Cows how I think they're going to respond to that loss. But they were right in it, and I mean, you know, one try, one extra try when they were up. If they scored the first try of the second half, then they fucking probably would have won the game. But you know, two very, very well coached sides that do put in every single week. But that is going to be a fucking tough loss for the Eels to go into Melbourne, be so close to winning and having the week off and now having to back up again, I think they're going to get hit hard by that.
And we've said all along the Eels are a very good side and there still is a possibility that that could yet be the grand final. But we'll talk about that and whether the Eels are going to get out of this weekend. Saturday night, you had Manly versus Penrith. To me, I think what's been lost in all this, you know, having a cry about whether the ball flicked Peachy's finger. I mean, let's just say it doesn't. Let's say it ricochets from Bryce Cartwright's boot. And how about Cardi Party dominating the game? His first really good performance of the year. So he grubs it through, it hits Cherry's foot, it hits Peachy's chest, thigh, maybe finger. I mean, if it clearly just hit him in the chest and went through and they score, then what's Barrett got to complain about? Because it was 10-all. There's no guarantee that Manly wins the game if that gets called in his favour. I understand that the Dylan Walker call was harsh, but even so, Manly immediately puts Penrith in their end goal and gets the ball down 6 and once again has a chance. And they didn't take their chances. They didn't take their chances all night. Their first try was completely against the run of play. Intercept, basically, when the Panthers had the numbers and Panthers probably should have been up 8-0. They took an intercept, went down the other end of the field, cross-field kick, and they took the lead. So, and that was the only points they scored for maybe 40 minutes of football. So I thought they were actually lucky in some ways to be at 10-all. I think Penrith was the deserving winners. I think Penrith were... just playing with more kind of intensity and fierceness after having had their pants pulled down the week before. And yeah, I think Manly only have themselves to blame with their opportunities there. Like at 10-all before the Peachy try, Cherry makes a break and Manly's gone through. You know, you could kick an early field goal there. You could have nearly earned a penalty. You can put something on. You can at least get a repeat set, but they drop the ball. They spread it wide and drop the ball. Down the other end, a bigger mistake then the referee decision was Tommy Turbo slipping over and kicking the ball dead when it was going to roll dead on its own. If you can remember that, in like the 74th minute, a grubber in the in goal was going dead and Tommy Turbo slipped and kicked it out himself. Panthers score the winning try off that set. And like, you know, the final score wasn't not decided by one try. They let him in again. And there was still about 2 minutes to go when they did let Cardi Party score that try. If you can get a stop there, you're down 6 with the ball. So, you know, they can't just say, oh, we wouldn't have conceded that one if we were still level. You know, you have to be good enough and you have to outscore your opposition. And they lost the game by 12 points. Tough one to swallow for them, but Penrith deserved the win for me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And the big difference for me was, you know, you watch that Manly game against the Panthers in round 26. They were so enthusiastic. Every time there was a drop ball by the Panthers, they're high-fiving each other. They're fucking going mental. The forwards were fucking psyched. You know, they beat up on the Panthers forwards in round 26. They got fucking obliterated in round 1 of the finals. I feel like it even looked like Manly was happy to be there. Blake Green and Cherry were really good round 26. Blake Green's kicking 40-20s. Cherry is, you know, unbelievable. And they were fucking non-existent. They didn't want the ball. Cherry didn't have the ball enough for mine. And as a half in a finals game, you need to demand it. But I just think they got pushed around in the forwards, which, you know, they didn't do in round 26. And that's what eventually cost them. Plus, you know, they were just beaten up all over the park. Their halves were worse. Their forwards were worse. And I think their outside backs were very, very average.
I mean, Dylan Edwards, and this is important to note for people, you know, interested in Friday night's game, if nothing else, Dylan Edwards was basically playing the game lame. He could not move. And he probably shouldn't have even played. So really, Manly got to go up against a weak Penrith side with basically a passenger playing number one and couldn't get it done at the end of the day, and they had their chances. And then probably the game of the round, you have to say, in what was an absolutely cracking round, was the Cowboys.
The under!
That was absolutely sensational. And it, I mean, we had our money all over the Cowboys. We said that Cowboys plus 8.5 was probably our favourite line of all four games. And we were pulling our hair out. As you can see, mate, got barely any left. In the first 30 minutes of that game, it was painful to watch. The Cowboys could not complete a set. The errors they were coming up with, the mistakes they were making. I mean, none more costly than Winterstein's mistake, first of all, to not get low. He probably needs to read the memo for wingers catching bombs near the goal line. Get low! For fuck's sake. And then don't compound the error by dropping the ball.
To the 20? Like, I don't know why. I don't understand. You're not getting to the 20-meter line.
And I I can live with that one being called a try to the Sharks. I mean, if you know, gun to my head, if I have to say what I think happened, I think Winterstein got his hand back on it after knocking on and grounds it just on the line. But if you can't be sure about whether he does ground it on the line, I can actually live with that one going to the Sharkies and just saying it's a very lucky try to the Sharks. The Sharks had their chances. Up 8-0, Cowboys could not hold the pill, and the Sharkies probably could have put him to bed if they did get up by 14-0, yeah. You know, something like that. Cows didn't even score a try. Well, Cowboys didn't even score points until 30 seconds left in the half, and that was just a penalty. Yeah, so, the game was there to be won in the first half by the Sharks, and they didn't take it, and you've got to give a lot of credit to the Cowboys, the way that they defended and the way that they did hang in there and hang tough. Plenty of excuses for them to kind of just give up, but they didn't, and they gave themselves a chance. They were completely back in it with the Maloney sin binning. I mean, are you happy with that being a sin binning? For me, it's a deliberate foul to stop a try-scoring opportunity, and he is a grub, and that's the difference for me between a penalty, which you can say sometimes penalty is players being a little bit over-enthusiastic. I think this one is he's reaching out with no intention of making a play at the ball. I can live with that one being a sin bin.
Totally. And a possibility, possibly could have scored that try. Probably would have got away with
it. He wouldn't have. No, but Maloney doesn't know what's behind him. And that gets the Cowboys back in the game. They obviously score a try after halftime and they pull that one within 2 points. But then, you know, there was also another really fortuitous moment for the Sharkies. They get a fifth tackle penalty when the Cows absolutely dominated them. They'd only made 20 metres that whole set. They're playing the fifth tackle inside their 30. And they drop the ball cold. I think it was Fecky or Lutelli drops it cold. And they get a penalty, which they end up scoring off a kick later that set to get back up by 8. And they're up by 8 with 15 to go. They absolutely, you know, for me, I thought that decision won them the game. And I thought it was a really terrible decision. And they were no one but themselves to blame from that point onwards. Now, I understand harsh call when the ball went through Fifita's legs and they called that a knock-on. I've already said, incorrect call to award the penalty to the Cowboys in front of the sticks. But they hung tough enough to give themselves a chance in that one. Absolutely taking +8.5 was the right play. It was errors that, like, no one's fault with themselves. Like, Valentine Holmes makes a break, gets nearly to halfway in the extra time and drops it when he gets some contact from Coop making the tackle. But, you know, they made 13 errors, something like that. They missed over 30 tackles. The Cowboys missed 11. The Cowboys deserve to win that one for me as well.
Yeah, totally agree with you. And they just fight so hard. And that's why it's, you know, I never feel stupid taking the points with the Cows because they just fight tooth and nail for 80 minutes. You never feel like you're out of it. And, I mean, they've done this throughout the whole season. You know, even I know they needed that, you know, go back to round 26 against the Broncos where they, you know, they needed a try in the last minute to give them a chance where Manly had to win that last game. But, you know, other teams might have just folded in that situation down 16 points, you know, but they fucking hung tough. You know, they've got to be tired, 75 minutes gone. It's going to be tough for them to back up. That was a brutal game. And obviously playing a full 90 minutes, you know, not a lot of teams do that. And they tend to struggle backing up the weekend after. We'll talk about that when we get to the Cows-Eels game. But I really like the look of this Cows side. You know, silly mistakes, like you said, by Winterstein, and they've got to fucking have a chat to him. He's been abysmal 2 weeks in a row. He's been absolutely horrendous. So just needs to fucking hold on to the ball. But, you know, they've just got so much heart. And, I think that they're not a roster that can fucking win the comp. They're not a team of destiny, just, you know, getting into the top eight, in the dying seconds, basically, with that Doggies win. But they are a team that you don't feel scared betting on because you know you're going to get 100% every time.
And we can talk more about them in a second, but two games to review, so that's why we actually wanted to deep dive in last week and talk about our takeaways beyond the final score, which obviously does not tell the full story. But here we go, two more elimination finals coming up. And for me, looks like two more barn burners, to be honest with you, but you want to let people know the betting numbers for this one?
Sure. So betting lines for all you guys out there interested in the punt, and hope you are because that's why you'd be watching this. Broncos hosting the Panthers at Suncorp. Broncos are 7.5-point favourites and 38.5 is the total.
And so uncertainty with Darius Boyd, not named in the 17. They definitely did miss him last week. and we questioned why they were starting Nikarima at fullback when you had the option to put Kahu or even Meade back there, or, you know, juggle those two around, and you could have kept Benji on the bench. But, yeah, they weren't good enough last week, and for me, they've got to somehow, I don't know, Milford can't all of a sudden learn how to defend better, but they need to protect him, I suppose, because it was just such a gaping liability there. But, you know, we've said before that when good teams have disappointing, you know, performances, you definitely expect that bounce back factor. When I look at these two sides on paper, now, I don't know how you feel about this, but I actually think Darius Boyd won't play. My reasoning is that even if he is 50-50, he's, you know, he's on the wrong side of 30. Hammy's a very, you know, tender kind of injury. And the way I see it is, if they can't beat the Panthers without Boyd, they probably can't beat the Storm at all, even with Boyd. So you,
no,
you know,
I agree, yeah.
So you back yourselves to beat Boyd. Panthers this week, rest Boyd, and then, you know, you have a chance. You know, you get into a grind against the Storm and would, you know, take it one week at a time for sure. But that's my opinion on Boyd. I don't think he'll play. And when I look on paper, I really think that Penrith is underrated, and Penrith probably has an equally able roster to the Broncos. I don't really see any big advantages in the Broncos roster. Where I see advantages for the Broncos is playing at home, playing at Suncorp. They always lift. They get calls. And they always perform well at Suncorp, especially in elimination games or in finals games in general. Coaching, I do see an advantage. I do actually have faith that Bennett will come up with a game plan against Penrith, whereas I really don't have a lot of respect for Hook. I understand that his boys played well last week, but I didn't think Manly were all that great. So I see kind of a big advantage there. And then, you know, a small advantage in one extra day's preparation and kind of not travelling. So for those reasons, I think Brisbane wins. But if I was playing the points line, I really do think I could only look at taking Penrith, you know, getting about a plus eight.
Yeah, I had a really tough time with this one. And I totally agree with you. When you said that you looked up and down the team list if Boyd wasn't going to play and the teams are relatively similar, they're fucking dead set up. And I know people claim that, like, you know, the Broncos are a top three side. Fair enough, they did finish up there. But you go through, you look at the outside backs, I feel like they're fairly similar. You look at the halves now that, you know, with Boyd being out, you got Benji in there. And the halves are fairly similar as well. Cleary's come on in leaps and bounds. Tyro May isn't actually terrible. You know, they're probably similar halves. And the Panthers have a fucking good forward pack. So do the Broncos, you know, fair enough. But they're a similar team on paper. Yes, like you said, the Broncos have an extra day's rest. Plus, you know, obviously, I think they should have won last week, so they lost. So you're getting a little bit of extra value, whereas the Panthers, I think, you know, had a pretty phony final score where they won by 12 when they probably shouldn't have won by that much. But with all the publicity with that bad call, you know, when the score was 10-all, I think people won't look too much into that. They'll say it should have probably been a closer game. Now, I'm not a huge conspiracy theorist, but, you know, the NRL does want the Broncos in the final. That they do. You know, they're going to draw more crowds, more highball, that sort of thing. So I think that the 50-50 calls will go the Broncos' way and the Broncos will probably win the penalty count. I think this line is probably reflecting, you know, not a 50-50 chance that Boyd plays, but probably slightly less than that. So I think if he does get scratched, the line won't move that much. But if he plays, you know, it probably goes up to 8.5, something like that. You know, it's a tough one for me because I do think Broncos win the game. I think they'll get the calls, and being at Suncorp is a very good home field advantage. I'd say it's worth at least 3 points. But yeah, you're right. You know, the only side I could look is Penrith. Despite it being home field advantage, I think that's probably, and the calls going into it as well, you know, I probably think the line should be, you know, closer to 6, 6.5 rather than the 7.5. But I'd say I might need an 8 or the hook with the 8.5 to take it.
And there's a reason why you had a hard time handicapping this game, and I did too, because it's unpredictable, because you just don't know what you're going to get out of Penrith. And even Brisbane over the last month have not been that consistent. We know that they can produce, like, absolute, almost impenetrable defence when they really need it. And then other nights they can concede 50 to the Eels, so it is hard to know what they're going to serve up. But, yeah, I think, you know, sounds square, but almost feel like Brisbane to win by 1 to 12 is not a bad wager. I feel like that's always going to be in the balance there.
Yeah, and you probably get something like $3 for that. And yeah, with the total, I don't have a good feel of the total as well. You know, I can find reasons to bet the over. I can find reasons to bet the under. because Brisbane's defence has been fucking solid, top four defence for sure, you know, for the whole season. But then last week, like you said, there were some gaping holes there. And with Penrith, because they're such an up-and-down team, you know, if they're just fucking cold, they won't fucking score 10 points. Whereas if they're on, you know, this could dead set be a fucking 34-24 game, you know. So it's a tough one for me with the total as well. You know, it's one of those games. I know there's only two games on the board, but it's almost one that I would stay away from unless I found a line that was a mistake or a stale line if something moves.
Maybe if Boyd was playing, you'd lean to the under because he organises the defence well. And, he kind of adds stability there. If he doesn't play, you might lead more to the over because I think Nikarima is not the same defensive fullback as Boyd, but, you know, offers different looks in attack. So, you know, that's something that might depend on personnel.
Totally. And I think if Boyd plays, you know, even though it's one player, I think it makes the Broncos lineup significantly better, you know, just with the reshuffling and that sort of thing. So I think he adds more value than just him by himself, because you get a player like Nikarima that can play his preferred spot in the halves rather than being in fullback and looking out of play.
And also, if Boyd plays, I wouldn't feel like I'm taking a big risk that, oh, Boyd might not be right. I would assume that if he plays, he must definitely be sweet because I've just said I don't think they would risk him if he wasn't basically 100%. So I don't think Boyd plays, but if he does, I think he'll be sweet and then I definitely would feel confident Brisbane will get the W.
Totally, because you know, Wayne Bennett knows that the Broncos are not beating the Storm without Darius Boyd. It's just not going to happen in Melbourne, you know. So it's like you said, yeah, to risk him this week, if he's not 100% and, you know, risk not having him the week after for Storm, you know, that'd be diabolical. They'd just get fucking slaughtered. But if they can just scrape the win here without him and have a fully healthy Darius Boyd next week, then they're half a chance. Saturday game. Oh, we've got the Eels hosting the Cowboys. Eels are 8.5-point favourites and 37.5 the total.
And just while you mentioned the Storm, we should just say it was only a few weeks ago. We actually did a video where we said, if you want to bet Roosters, Storm, Quinella, that's paying $5, which it was, you know, 6 weeks ago. And that actually was one of the rare times we've ever seen Quinella odds, which the bookies throw up there as a bit of fun, and always not in the favour of the punter. We actually said that was value. And, I mean, that's paying like $2 now. So hopefully a few people did jump on that Quinella because it looks good. Not saying that it's set in stone just yet. The sides that play this weekend will have something to say about that. But, you know, and including this match, the Eels certainly have the belief that they can go all the way and definitely want that rematch with the Storm. You know, there's a letdown factor that you probably will speak about because they got so close. You know, they had to go into the Sheds leading 10-4. Saying to themselves, this is such a great opportunity that we have here. If they could have won that, they could have got the week off, they could have got the home prelim, they could have sent the Storm into the same side of the draw as the Roosters. You don't get many better opportunities than that. They got, you know, obviously with Munster in the bin, they got to play against 12 men for a portion of that one. So it hurts, especially when they, you know, got a couple rough calls. They've got to get over that one. And we do both agree that Brad Arthur, or as I call him, King Arthur, is probably the second best coach in the combo and the second only to Craig Bellamy. I think he lifts his boys. I just think that club has a really good kind of mentality, confidence, and similarly, so do the Cowboys. It's just a side that absolutely turns up and they turn up for each other. This won't be a bet against the Eels. This is just a bet on the Cowboys. Just simply the fact that this Cowboys roster, 1-17, is still bloody solid. And I'm pretty sure we made all these points last week when we made the case for the Cows to actually beat the Sharks. Now, I don't know if I can go as far as to say the Cows will win this weekend, but I love them catching the +8.5 once again. I understand no JT. We understand no Matt Scott. But beyond that, the roster, you know, it's all in the news that they're completely a mash unit. But since they got Gavin Cooper back, since they got Lockie Coop back, it's still a very strong side with really not too many weaknesses. One of those weaknesses is Winterstein. Justin O'Neill's been named in the reserve. So if he was to come into the side, I would really hope that they could slide maybe Django out to the wing and drop Winterstein. It was absolutely fucking woeful. Looked like he was the mole trying to lose his team the game last week.
Oh my God. And the week before fucking he was terrible.
Well, now he's carrying an injury and he's got his thigh strapped and stuff. So, you know, I'll try and cut him some slack and say he's playing hurt. But don't play him hurt if you have the opportunity to bring Justin O'Neill. I don't think Justin O'Neill's great, but he has played State of Origin matches in that Queensland. He's experienced and he's going to do a better job than Winterstein. And it's simply the fact that the Cowboys have a gritty, you know, strong core. They've also are very well coached. They've got a great attitude. They don't give the opposition anything. I want to give a shout out to my old man. Not always the sharpest punter, old Russell, the love muscle. But, you know, he said to me that the Cowboys are Melbourne light. And they basically are, you know, a kind of Melbourne light in the sense that, yeah, they don't beat themselves. You've got to go out and beat them. And that's what the Sharkies couldn't do. Maybe the Eels can, but yeah, it should be a close one. You just too many points for a side that really does defend so well and has options in attack. I think that the Cowboys didn't take as many chances as they could have in attack against Sharks. I think they can improve on last week. Now, we spoke about the rest factor. They're going to have one day less to recover from this one. They're going to have to back up from 90 minutes of football on Sunday against a side that played Saturday. But I think they can. I think they still, you know, still don't have to play till Saturday night. And I think they get a lift. They get a boost from the fact that, as you said, they got lucky on Sunday in round 26 when the Dragons did them a massive solid. They did get lucky again from where they were, the odds they were to win that match, to come and win it. And they do have, yeah, I think they have to have just confidence and a nothing to lose attitude. And that's going to make this one really exciting to watch.
Totally, yeah. And you spoke about the letdown spot for the Eels. I think that's underrated. I think, you know, and that's the reason I didn't sort of talk about it with the Broncos too much, because when you get a really good team like the Broncos, you know, lose a close one, I do think that they're going to show up. They still think they can win the comp. So they'll still show up at home. The team like the Eels, where I think, you know, they've lost Bevan French, you know, they've lost Gutho, they know they've been undermanned, and to get a chance to sneak into the top four and to get a chance at a home preliminary final and fall so short, I have to think that they're thinking, you know, we don't have the best team in the comp. We're not even top three roster-wise. We needed that. We needed that win. We needed that week off. And to have a chance of winning the comp to be in that preliminary final, I think they're going to be a little bit down for this one. I think it's a fucking letdown spot for Parra. I think it's a confidence-boosting win for the Cows. We said, you know, in round 26, you know, when they snuck into the finals that they were going to put in a good effort. You know, and they did. They got a second chance. And, you know, do I think that they're a team of destiny? No. But perhaps they do. They're going to fucking have some confidence from that. I think they go into Parra. They think they can win this one. You know, like you said, the rest factor, it's not a huge deal. Obviously, playing 90 minutes with less than a week backup is tough. But playing the Melbourne Storm is also tough. And that was not only a physically draining game, that was an emotionally draining game for Parra as well. I combine that with a few off-field issues. There's been fires, you know, all over Sydney. That's going to be a bit of a distraction, I think. The temperatures have been fucking soaring. It's been as hot as it could possibly be around Sydney all this week. They said it's meant to ease up sort of late Thursday. But that's got to take it out of you. I know you're still going out training and that kind of thing. But, you know, those little things, bushfires all over the city. That's a distraction, as well as training in fucking 36-degree heat. I think the line's far too high. I've looked the rosters up and down, and I can't see too much of a difference, honestly, especially with Bevan French out. I don't think, you know, fair enough, I'll give the Eels a couple points home advantage, but do not for the life of me think the Eels are 6 points better than the Cowboys, that's for sure. This is going to be a defensive grind, and I'll take the plus 8.5 points. I think it'll be a low-scoring grind, and we've already got a couple best bets on this one. We've got plus 8.5 for the Cows for the full game, and we've taken them plus 4.5 for the first half as well. But I'm going to run one by you. What do you reckon? Someone actually mentioned it to me. I don't mind it. But Cows to win either half, you can catch it at pretty much $1.90 odds, which means that they can either win the first half or, you know, you start the second half at nil all and they just have to win the second half.
Yeah, I like that one. I do like that because they're only kind of 4-point dogs in the first half and about 4-point underdogs in the second, and you get two bites of the cherry. I like the Cowboys. I think we should make this one a best bet as well. Cowboys to score more than 12.5 points. Because I've seen it at 14.5 in other places. Yeah, exactly. So I think 12.5 on 365 you can get. Ethan Lowe is definitely no Nathan Cleary, no Hazem El Masri, that's for sure, but you never know. If they just give the ball to Jason Taumalolo, they might be scoring near the sticks anyway. And, you know, looks like him. he is absolutely sensational. And I actually was watching the game saying, give the ball to JT, the other JT, yeah. You know. And a guy like him helps you win the forward battle, or at least match them in the forwards. And if the Cowboys do match them in the forwards, I mean, which side's playmakers do you really trust? Do you trust, like, Lockie Coote, Michael Morgan, who's been playing the house down, Jake Granville? Or do you trust, you know, Will Smith, who's only come into the side recently, Corey Norman, Mitchell Moses, and King or Pritchard, depending on who they play at the nine. The Cowboys have guys that actually have more reps in the finals, and I actually like that Cowboys spine, which people don't understand because they just think there's no JT there. That's actually still a spine that gets it done, and we've seen it now a few weeks in a row. So we've got, that's four best bets we've already got on this game now to repeat. Yeah, plus four and a half at half time. I think that's still available on Sportsbet, but it's already been smashed on other sites. Plus 8.5 is pretty widely available. We took it on Will Hill yesterday. To win either half is 3.65. Over 12.5 points is on 3.65. I don't even mind Eels. Cowboys' time of first try is within the first 21.5 minutes. Pretty much we took the same bet against the Sharks last week and we lost on it. But I would take it again because I think that, the Cowboys have you know, probably three tries in them in this one and should be getting one in the first half of the first half. Yeah.
What I would be more inclined to do, I think, because I do see this as a real low-scoring game. I mean, we'll have to shop around like we always do, but, I mean, I would take a para time of try after. I just think it's going to be, it's really going to be a defensive grind, and I think they're going to play it a bit safer to start off with. But you're right, Jason Taumalolo was best on field last weekend, and it just boggles my fucking mind. I mean, the guy's obviously a fucking monster. Like, his body is fucking built like a brick shithouse. But what I can't comprehend is how he can fucking run it at a million miles an hour for 80 minutes, yet fucking 95% of the forwards in the NRL can't fucking do a simple task. All you have to do is fucking lift some weights in the fucking gym, don't drop the ball, and just run it as hard as you can every time for 80 minutes. It's not too much to ask for my forward.
So you reckon if I just lift some weights in the fucking gym, I'd look like Taumalolo? I could do what he does?
You've gotten as big as you can possibly get.
That's a scary thought. He is unreal. And I mean, if Flano wants to have a cry, mate, Taumalolo didn't even have a run up. He caught the ball flat footed, one off the ruck, and he was stronger than the four guys trying to bring him down. That he wanted it more than the four trying to tackle him. That play won them the match basically, and that play proved which team had more desire. You know, he is insatiable. Honestly, you get a hard on watching him running the ball. It's fucking bowling ball, and he's one of the best players in the comp. And I said earlier this year he's worth $10 million for 10 seasons or whatever the deal was. He's the best forward in the comp, and the Eels are gonna have their hands full dealing with him. There you go. We do have a bunch of best bets. We'll put our heads together what we do. These are our initial thoughts, but we'll check every single bookie that we trust, every market. We'll find value in every play that we can. Only two games, but you already know we've got a few sides we like, and we'll post it up officially on our website, www.tripodbetting.com, as well as in our group, which there's a link to in this video.
Yeah, not only, you'll have to do an extra step. We've been obviously deleted by Facebook so many times, our group, so you'll have to join the group via the link in the post. And then there's instructions there. It'll be the very first post you see. And just follow those instructions. You'll get straight into the group. Get all our best bets. We've got comps, giveaways, that kind of thing. And obviously really good sign-up offers, you know, that are exclusive to our group. So, join it. And we'll be back next week to break it down. And hopefully we'll have another winning weekend. That'll do it for this week, guys.
Cheers, lads.